Sure. So good evening, everyone. I will call this meeting to order. And just as a reminder for everyone, this is the Oakland Fund for Children and Youth meeting of the Planning and Oversight Committee, the Evaluation Subcommittee. So I'm calling this meeting to order at 5:04 on October 28th, 2020.
Great.
And this is just so to us, I know that we have attendees here. And so this is just a reminder for our attendees in terms of if you want to comment, to use your raise your hand button in your Zoom. And we will inform you when you have the opportunity to respond or ask questions. So right now we'll go to roll call and introductions. Right now we'll just do, there are three members here who are of the POC committee. And if you all, if our chair would introduce herself first.
Yes, Tatiana Kamaleli. I'm representing District 7.
And Jorge.
Yeah, thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Jorge Velasco, District 5 POC member.
Hi, and I'm Monica Rita Allen. I represent District 3. Introductions to, if staff can introduce themselves.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mike Wetzel. I'm the program planner with the Oakland Fund for Children and Youth.
Scott. Hey, everyone. Scott Kim, program analyst with OFCY.
And if we get,
I just say we have no real announcements as far as staff, but if any of the POC members did, be in time.
No, I don't have any, none at this time. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the agenda review today is that we'll have open forum for any of the members who are observing. If you have any comments or basically comments during open forum, then we'll have a presentation of the OFCY Independent 2019-2020 Evaluation Report by Social Policy Research Associates. And they will present in three parts. Part one with the fund level report, part two strategy level reports, part three program level profile reports. And then we'll have a discussion of the 2021 evaluation design and timeline, and then we will adjourn. So if we want to get started with, are there any members or attendees that would like to make comment? And I first see a Marianne Ceballos. I hope I'm saying it right.
Yes, hi. I don't know how to change my view. But yes, I just want to do an introduction because I'm new to this group. I am with the Unity Council and serving as Associate Director of Youth Services. So that means just kind of overseeing our Latino Men and Boys program, our Latinx Mentoring Achievement Program, and our Youth Career Services. So happy to be here and learn more about OFCY. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's appreciated. Is there anyone else of our attendees who may want to speak at this time? Okay, so hearing none, you will also have the opportunity after each part is presented to make comments or ask questions if you have any, to make any public comments. So we will now start with Social Policy Research Associates, and I would ask if you all could introduce yourselves as well before I present. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mika Clark. I'm a senior associate at Social Policy Research Associates, and I've been working on the OFCY evaluation for coming on, I think it's a little more than 6 years now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Heather Lewis-Sharp. I'm a principal at Social Policy Research Associates. I'm the director of our Philanthropy, Equity, and Youth Division, or co-direct that division. And I'm leading this evaluation with Rachel Estrella.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Estrella. Senior Associate at Social Policy Research Associates, serving as co-lead with Heather.
Great. And do you all have, you all have a PowerPoint, correct?
Yes. Should I share my screen?
Yeah. Why don't you start to share the screen, and then I just did a brief introduction in the sense that the city legislation requires that OFCY engage an independent third-party evaluation team to assess the impact of the fund and that the funds are being spent as per the legislation and the strategic plan. Social Policy Research has worked with OFCY for the last few years to provide this independent third-party evaluation. What they do is they work very closely with staff as well as with the programs on the evaluation design, and importantly, sharing the findings with the programs themselves to use for their own program improvements and planning work. The evaluation design, as SPR will get into, looks at the fund on three levels, from the fund level across entire investment to the strategy level down to the program level. And Mika and the team will walk us through with that. Just happy to pass it off.
Great, thanks, Mike. So thank you so much for the opportunity to present our evaluation findings with you today. Like I said earlier, my name is Mika Clark, and I'm the project manager for this evaluation, and my colleagues Heather Lewis-Sharp and Rachel Estrella, who are the co-principal investigators, are also with us, and they will be joining into the presentation in a little bit as well. So first, just a little bit about us. We're from Social Policy Research Associates. It's a small research and evaluation firm. Our currently empty office is located in Oakland, just right across from OFCY's office as well. And we've been working with OFCY for a little over 6 years as the evaluation and learning partner. And we deeply appreciate this project. The majority of our team call Oakland home, so it's a very meaningful project for us to be working on. And the three of us who are joining you today are all working mothers, so we definitely understand at a very personal level how valuable these programs are. And we're very happy to be able to participate. So our plan today is to run through the presentation that we're planning for the Life Enrichment Committee, except for, instead of going through all nine OFCY strategies today, we're only going to be covering the OFCY fund level and then the career awareness and employment support strategy. And after that, we'll have time for a more informal discussion to answer any questions you might have. We're hoping to get a lot of feedback to help us improve the report and the presentation as we go forward. Okay, so first we just wanted to begin with just a very brief snapshot of what OFCY is. So as you can see from this slide, OFCY supports a wide variety of programs. There's 153 in all that are designed to ensure that our young people can thrive. And these programs fall into four different goal areas and nine funding strategies that are designed to support kids at all points on the age spectrum, as you can see here, starting from babies and toddlers in the early childhood programs, to school-age children and youth, all the way up to young adults up to age 20. And in this last year, in fiscal year 2019-2020, close to $20 million were given to community-based programs to support this work. And the final report contains a lot of information, so I just wanted to take a little pause to make sure that folks understand the structure of the report. As Mike previously said, there's three different sections. So the first one focuses on the OFCY fund level. It's an overarching description of all the programs. And then section B, we hone in a little bit more onto each of the strategy level reports. And then finally, we provide program profiles where you can learn a little bit more about each individual program that is a part of the fund. We also just wanted to give a little quick explanation of our data sources. So to inform this evaluation, we use a multi-method approach, which draws on a range of both quantitative data and qualitative data. The quantitative data include administrative data that was entered by program staff into a database called CitySpan. So that's all the attendance and enrollment data. The comprehensive after school strategy also draws on OUSD academic records. So in addition to that administrative data, we also deployed surveys to program staff. And for comprehensive after school programs, we also surveyed principals and community school managers. Typically, we also include results from participant surveys, ranging from the youth who participate in programs and also the parents and caregivers who participate in the early childhood programs. However, these surveys are typically fielded in the spring, and due to the challenges of fielding the survey during the first couple months of the pandemic, we made the survey optional last year. So we're only sharing the survey results with the individual programs that were able to administer it. And finally, we have some really rich qualitative data that we're able to draw on, which includes interviews, focus groups, and this helps us round out the quantitative data by contextualizing it, complementing it, and providing some more oversights into how the programs work to support children and youth. And so next, we're going to just dive into the overarching OFCY level findings before we turn to the strategy-specific reports. Okay. So first, I want to focus on who is served by OFCY. So we're pleased to note that over 20,000 children and youth participated in OFCY-funded programs last year. And in light of OFCY's commitment to racial equity, the data shows that OFCY programs are serving OFCY's target population of children and youth who identify as African American or Black, Latinx, and Asian Pacific Islander. In fact, we noticed that OFCY programs served 1 out of 3 African American or Black youth in the city, and 1 out of every 4 child or youth who identifies as Latinx or Asian Pacific Islander. And in the tables on this slide, we show the number of OFCY participants from each of these target populations, along with the percentage of Oakland youth served in those populations. And just as a side note, the 21,237 children and youth served that's cited here, that doesn't include preschoolers who attended child development centers and Head Starts that benefited from the support of mental health consultants. And it also doesn't include young children who may not have themselves attended programs, but indirectly benefited because of their parents' attendance in parent support programs. And OFCY is also committed to funding the schools, communities, and families that are most impacted by inequity. The maps shown here show that the highest number of OFCY participants, which is indicated by the darker shades of blue in the map on the left. Those correspond to the neighborhoods that experience the most stress, as indicated by the darker shades of red on the right. So in this map, stress is a measure defined by unemployment rates, housing cost burden, and the percentage of OUSD students who qualify for free or reduced price lunch. So you can see OFCY is serving those communities that could most use that support. Okay, and for those of you who are familiar with the evaluation, you'll notice something different this year. So this year we're piloting an evaluation framework that aligns with the city's shift to results-based accountability, or RBA. So under this framework, we have identified indicators that answer the 3 guiding RBA questions. So first, how much did programs accomplish? Second, how well did they do it? And finally, is anyone better off? So you can find an overview of the indicators that we've selected to answer these questions on page 9 of the report. And now we're going to briefly review our findings related to the first 2 questions. So typically we use participant surveys to assess participants' progress towards each strategy's desired outcomes to answer the 3rd question. This year, we're instead going to be focusing on qualitative findings related to these participant outcomes, and you'll find that in the strategy level report. Okay, so thinking about that first question, how much did programs accomplish? As shown here, OFCY programs did a lot last year. So as mentioned previously, 21,237 children and youth were served, along with 1,981 parents and caregivers. And notably, about 10% of youth actually participated in multiple programs. So they were touched multiple times by the fund. And across all of these programs, participants spent over 4 million cumulative hours in programming. So that's 4 million hours of developmentally appropriate, enriching experiences for Oakland's young people that they might not otherwise have access to. And on average, youth receive close to 200 hours of service. This is a significant amount of services that youth are receiving. And because OFCY is designed to serve a very diverse group of children and youth with different needs and different interests, the amount of time they participate varied quite a bit, as shown here in this graph on the right. But notably half, in other words, over 10,000 young people spent at least 120 hours in programming. And now thinking about how well programs did it. So to answer this question, we looked at how well programs met their projections. So in other words, were they successful in serving the number of youth that they anticipated serving, that they said when the year was beginning, this is how many youth we're going to serve? And did participants spend as much time in programming as programs had anticipated? So before we look at these numbers, I just want to caution that we must consider these results in the context of the pandemic, particularly for progress toward the number of young people served and the number of parents and caregivers served. Because programs projected these numbers that they would serve over the full year. So they said, you know, over the full year, we're going to serve 200 youth. However, this evaluation is actually only considering attendance through March 31st. Because of the shelter in place. So some programs, or most programs, didn't have the full year to meet their enrollment numbers. So we wouldn't necessarily expect all programs to reach 100% for these measures this year. But still, looking at these indicators, it seems that programs are generally on target in terms of meeting their projected enrollment and their projected attendance. And speaking of the pandemic, we really can't talk about program accomplishments without highlighting the various ways that programs supported children, youth, and their families during the confusing and sometimes traumatic first months of the shelter in place. So during this time, programs helped young people and families connect to resources to meet their basic needs and provided some really critical support around internet connections and accessing technology, getting Chromebooks, getting hotspots, all of that stuff. And just as importantly, program staff reached out over phone, social media, Zoom, any platform they could to connect with participants and just check in on them and see how they're doing, let them know that someone cares. And finally, programs innovated and they found ways to continue providing services virtually. And the appendix of the report goes into a lot more detail about some of the inspiring ways that programs were able to provide those supports. So I hope this overview gives you a good sense of the scale of the services offered by OFCY. I'm now going to pass the reins over to my colleague, Heather, who's going to go into more detail about the career awareness and employment strategy so you get more of a richer sense of what it is that the programs are doing.
Okay, so as Mika said, we're only sharing one strategy level report in this presentation, but next week at the POC meeting next week, we'll be sharing 9 different strategy level reports with you. Next slide. So we're sharing some findings from the Career Awareness and Employment Support Programs. There are 15 Career Awareness and Support Programs that were supported by OFCY this cycle. The programs provide career exploration, work readiness training, on-the-job experience, skill-building activities, and exposure to career options and employment. The programs provide activities and support tailored to a range of participants, including high school students who are interested in high-demand career pathways, such as health, opportunity youth, and youth that face barriers to employment or self-sufficiency. The program particularly prioritizes African-American and Latinx youth in East Oakland, Fruitvale, and West Oakland. And in addition to wages and stipends that young people usually or often receive through these programs, they often get support with meals or
transportation or clothing support that can help them maintain employment. Next slide. So as Mika introduced, we're using this results-based accountability framework this year to talk about the success of the programs. This first question is how much did programs do? And so for the Career Awareness and Employment Support programs, they served over 1,500 youth. Those young people received on average 108 hours or participated in programming for 108 hours. Nearly 1,200 youth were placed and participated in jobs and internships. And those young people received on average a little over $1,200 in average earnings. And that was in total about $1.4 million in total wages earned. Next slide. And then this next slide looks at the how well the programs do it. This is really about the how effective programs were at reaching their goal. And you can see from this slide that programs are really effective at reaching their career and awareness and employment support programs were effective at reaching their enrollment and average hours of service goals. In terms of total hours of service, they reached about 87%, so provided 87% on average of their hours of service, their target hours of service. And then in terms of job placement, over three quarters of youth were placed into a job, and over 70% of youth received at least 10 hours of work experience. So the results for the Career Awareness and Employment Program, and the handoffs to Mika again, who's going to go over the program profiles that we do for each of the programs.
Thanks, Heather. So the final section of the report includes the program profiles. Like I said, this is where readers can learn about the accomplishments of each individual program, as well as the demographics of their participants. So you'll see on this slide, got a portion of the first page of the profile. And this is again the Career Awareness and Employment Support profile. And this summarizes the RBA results at the program level. So as you can see, it covers each of those three guiding questions. And this particular report that we're showing here is from a program that submitted surveys this year. So it includes the indicators that are based on survey results. But in the report itself, we're only going to be including indicators that are based on the administrative data in CitySpan because, again, surveys were not required last year. And this is the second page of the profile. Here we have, for this strategy, we show work experience outcomes at the top, and then we show the demographics of the participants. Everything from gender, race, and then also including where participants live. In future years, when we have the full survey results, there will be a couple more pages that will show survey results by individual question from the survey with a comparison to strategy level averages. Okay. And now I'm going to pass it off to Rachel, who was gonna give us a little summary and a conclusion.
Thank you. So I think as we think about the findings that we've just shared about the ways in which OFCY-funded programs work so hard to support the well-being of our young people, and particularly those hit hardest by deeply rooted inequities, I just also wanted to make sure to take some time to pause and step back and consider OFCY's role in all of this, because when we think about OFCY's investments, it's not just about what they do or what or who they fund, but it's also about, it's important to lift up how they engage, because I think that that's critical to understanding the overarching like investment and the work of OFCY, because OFCY is not just a funder. Right? They're a partner who uses their unique position within an ecosystem of actors to ensure that expertise, knowledge, and resources are leveraged towards shared goals around improving outcomes for our young people. So as a systems level partner, this includes things like alignment and coordination with other city agencies that are focused on violence prevention and ensuring healthy child and youth development. And it also includes sharing opportunities and resources from their systems partners with grantees so that those grantees can be aware of and benefit from these other opportunities that are available to them in the city. And as a partner with their grantees, this partnership includes partnering with grantees to ensure that their voices inform the goals and the strategy development. And that's all about recognizing that the expertise lies in the organizations that serve our children, youth, and families. And so, to that end, OFCY invests a significant amount of time and resources in ensuring that the communities have meaningful voice in the strategic planning process and making sure that SPR, us, we also create spaces at the beginning of each funding cycle to incorporate grantee expertise and insight into the evaluation. And again, recognizing the wealth of expertise held by OFCY's pool of grantees, OFCY creates space at every grantee convening for peer networking and strategy sharing and learning around common challenges and best practices. And at these same convenings, in addition to fostering peer learning spaces, OFCY and SPR also partner to share data and information to support grantees' efforts at their own continuous improvement. And so ultimately, these partnership efforts to support the great work of the OFCY grantees have resulted in some pretty strong outcomes, even in an incredibly difficult year. There's a lot in our reports to digest, and so we're just excited that you have a chance to dive in. But in the meanwhile, we just wanted to like highlight these big takeaways, which are that over 21,000 children and youth were served by OFCY programs, that most of these children and youth live in neighborhoods with the highest needs and who are experiencing the highest levels of stress. And to that end, OFCY has been really intentional about where and for whom it is prioritizing its investments. And to that end, it's been really successful in reaching its priority populations. So I'll pause there and open up a space for questions.
And I'd say we'd start with the POC members and go from there. And then after the POC has an opportunity, then open it up to staff and then to the public for comments as well.
I didn't have any questions, but I just wanted to thank you all on a great presentation. And just the visuals were very, very, it made it more comprehensive as you spoke through all of the information, so I just wanted to acknowledge that.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think mine have been two that I'm curious about. So I noticed that you stated that the with the organizations in terms of how we partner or how the organization partners with other organizations in terms of their cycles of continuous improvement. So what are some of those, I don't know if it was captured in the evaluation, but what are some of those methodologies in terms of how that's done?
We work really closely with the Oakland Unified School District, expanded learning program, which co-funds all the after-school programs along with OFCY. And so we work with them as well. And so that's part of their continuous learning process. We share data with the grantees and they react to and lead them through conversations about how to make meaning of that data. And then with Oakland Unified, we're also working with them to help think through what quality means for their after school programs. And we do that jointly with the programs are jointly funded with OFCY as well.
You want to
say something more about that, Rach?
Yeah, so OFCY holds regular grantee convenings, and a big portion of that convening is dedicated to both information sharing with us sharing data with the grantees, but then also using that time for learning, investments in learning, either through peer sharing, and we also spend time going through like those program profiles that we're kind of towards the later part or part C of our presentation. We share those profiles with the grantees. We do them twice a year. So at the midpoint of the year, we share those profiles with them. and let them know like how they're doing in relation to the targets that they set for themselves. And during those grantee meetings, we break out into groups to really sort of to go over the data. What is the data telling them? Asking them some strategic guiding questions around how to think about the data in terms of either affirming what they're doing well and just sort of making sure that they continue in that what those strategies are that they are doing well, but that also I think highlighting areas where they might want to, they might need to invest a little more in improvement. And that those data profiles will show that. We've also done things like had panels. So for areas where some folks are struggling, we've sort of asked grantees who are doing well in those arenas, for example, to share some of their strategies, some tips and tricks. For the ways in which they work to improve, like for example, if it's around recruitment or engagement. At the end of all of those grantee convenings as well, we also we conduct a survey about like what worked well in those meetings and what more they want to learn about. And at each of those, we ask them specifically, like, what are the areas, learning areas that you want to tackle, either around your performance or just around things that are specific to how you implement your programs. And so depending on what those things are, we look at those topics that are bubbling up as real areas of interest for folks. Some of them have been things like trauma-informed care, and recruitment, again, student recruitment, student engagement. Those things kind of change as the year is going. We lift them up in the subsequent convening, and depending on what the topic is, we think about ways in which I think we can get those questions, we can really sort of dig into those topics. If that is like, say, a peer panel who are successful in those arenas that can sort of talk about it. Sometimes we bring in guest speakers. We've had capacity building training sessions around trauma-informed care. And so we've sort of asked for folks to sort of give us some idea about what they want to learn more about. And we really sort of follow where their needs are and do our best to also share data back with them around those particular areas of interest and areas where they want to improve.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Just a couple more. So with OUSD, their data protocol, is it different from what you all do, or do you kind of model it after what they do when they gather together? So I know all of the everyone that we support is all part of OUSD.
Yeah, there's like a slightly different subset of grantees that they have, but we there's a lot of overlap in terms of the after school programs year round, and yeah, we use all that. We've aligned our data sources so that we rely on the same data sources. The difference is, you know, because we also work with them, we're able to pull in the academic attendance data and other types of data to include that in the evaluation as well. And we didn't do that before the partnership with OUSD. And we meet with them, we use a lot. We've aligned our surveys, we use the same surveys. We did the principal survey this last year, so we coordinate with them. I don't know if that makes sense. Is there anything else to say about that, Mika?
Okay, and then this is my last one. So then how do you help, or how do we evaluate any of the grantees in terms of when they're going through cycles of continuous improvement? How do they know the outcomes they have? What's the impact of their, I guess, what are the outcome impacts? So is it depending on when you all come and evaluate in terms of, oh, we're going to help you go through like your strategy, but do any of them have their own, like how do we know that their evaluation process and their own internal organizations are working? Or are they waiting until you all come in and kind of help partner with them?
I think I would say that it kind of depends on the organizations. You have such a range of organizations being supported by OFCY. Some of them are very small, and some of them are connected with large agencies that have their own evaluation capacity. So there's certain ones that do have their own kind of internal evaluation processes. And to that extent, for those folks, like often they'll come and ask us like how we can align some of the evaluation measures that we're doing or how they can align it with what we're doing so that they kind of speak to one another as best they can. And for those that are smaller, we try to use those grantee convenings as times to like hold office hours. We also make ourselves available outside of those convenings too, so that we can they can have time to sort of review that data, and we can support them in thinking about how they can use that data strategically around thinking about their continuous improvement.
And it is tricky because I think the programs would love to have more, you know, like program specific data, which we're not able to provide. But one of the things that we did, and we do at the start of every cycle, is we did a logic modeling process with the grantees where we brought them in for each of the different strategies to talk through their goals, you know, what makes sense in terms of measuring for quality, what are their desired outcomes. So we make sure to make the evaluation as aligned with their goals as possible, right? It can't speak to everything that they do because they're nuanced programs and they vary a lot, you know, in their models. But we try to get the kind of common denominator pieces right. So that way when we're delivering the evaluation to them, it's as useful as possible.
Okay, thank you. I saw Scott's hand. Was Scott's hand up? And then he put it down.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that I was going to ask them to talk a little bit about the logic modeling and sort of the resulting graphic, the way it lays out sort of outcomes and ties up for each strategy, what the impact that we want to see is, because I think those are very helpful for me to understand by strategy. But then Heather did, so that's why I kind of interrupted.
Anyone from the committee, do you all have any questions,
Jorge? I just had one question. You mentioned that you were able to identify that over 21,000 youth were served, but it did not include preschool. Is there a reason why they're excluded? Why is that not a part of it?
In previous years, the programs that provide the mental health consultants did have to enter each individual preschool student into CitySpan, but it was a big burden on them. So it was just decided that it would be better for the programs to not have to enter all those students. So instead, they're just tracking the hours that they spend providing those services.
I'll say as staff, we've been trying to explore to get the data directly from Head Start. Head Start is a program in the Human Services Department as well. We've been trying to get that data for a long time directly from them to relieve that burden from the programs. Because there's programs that are working within 20 different Head Start sites at various hours. A lot of times in the prior years, there's an over-projection of participation in hours for the Head Start programs and the CDCs for the mental health. And so we were trying to get a better assessment. And I think this is a good year to actually think about what's the best data to really collect on that strategy and how we could do a better job in getting a fair representation of what that work is in that strategy.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments from our committee or staff? If not, before you go to the next part, are there any comments from any of our attendees?
I know I might have a comment, but I don't know if Sandy or Scott have comments as well or anything you want to add first.
Now that it's time for me.
Yeah, I just caught the last part of it. I'm sorry that I'm late and I have to go off for a 6 o'clock meeting, but the last part seemed really good. I'm looking forward to just looking at the whole PowerPoint if that can be made available. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to reading the complete report. So thank you guys for all of this work. Really helpful when we use this to explain to the full POC and the public and the city council what OFCY is all about.
Thank you. I do have 1-2 points. I really want to thank SPR for trying to implement this new results-based accountability framework of how much, how well, and is anyone better off. And as they're trying to do this in year one of a three-year grant cycle with the shelter in place, it really threw a monkey wrench into everything. And I appreciate how nimble they've been to try to still provide a substantial report, knowing that in prior years, it's usually been in March, in April, and May is when programs fielded surveys. And all that was a big loss because everyone was scrambling. And as I say, we didn't require it because there's other primary needs going on in March and April and May. And we knew trying to put programs to say, let's get some youth survey responses or parent survey responses wasn't the primary need at the time. We look forward to this year, next year, really trying to build out the program design that they did in year one for SPR. So I just want to put that out there. I know this has been a tough year and they are really trying to change their model from their prior years to implement RBA. And my only real comments would be, please put your page numbers to correspond with your slides, because your report is the foundation of the work. You have a really tremendous report. You put a lot of effort into the written document, and your PowerPoint is just the tip of it. And you have a lot of things that you could refer people to if we could refer them to the page numbers. And for the POC, it might be just the page numbers of our meeting packet, but something to tie it in so they could go directly in and see the depth of your strategy profile report, or the depth of the work, looking at, you know, who the participants are and their hours. Because I know your time is so hard to say everything across 153 programs, 9 strategies, 1 fund, $19.7 million. So just refer them to your document. That's be my biggest advice.
Yeah, that makes sense. That.
My only other small advice was be just to explain to everyone, in RBA, we are trying to establish baselines. And baselines aren't established, and this year is a funky year to establish any kind of performance. So when they're showing baselines for or outcomes for the year for strategies, I think as a POC to consider the bigger question in strategic planning this year is like, what's the impact of the strategy? What's the impact of the programs? How are the evaluators and staff able to measure it and convey it? And baselines right now are not set in stone, right? I think these are things that we have to look at, of like what makes sense to say is, hey, this program is doing what it's supposed to be doing, the strategy is doing what it's supposed to be doing. But, yeah. That's it. Pass it back.
Okay, so is there, yeah, I just want to emphasize, I think the graphics, I think I've seen how I shifted over time, and this is much user-friendly in terms of reading the document, where before the document was like, it was pretty dense. So I appreciate that for sure. And I agree with Mike, like if you have a PowerPoint and you want someone to refer back to the document, then page numbers would be helpful, because many of us will skim it, but we don't necessarily have time to read it in depth. And then it makes sense and process it as you all are presenting with the PowerPoint. Are there any attendees who have comments? All right, well, seeing none, then you all please proceed to the next topic.
So the next is an outline for our evaluation activities for the coming year. Is that right?
Sure. Yes, and I think it'd be a just good opportunity to say, you know, what are you doing and how is it changing? And, you know, what are you building upon? And honestly, for our POC members to kind of ask their questions on the design and get a sense of what your timeline is looking like. And I was realizing when I was looking at the work, Heather, that there are some milestones coming up, like the summer report and the mini report to share out.
Mm-hmm. So we're we're headed into the activities for this year. We've already launched, like, made available the participant surveys, because some programs do like cohort-based programs where they survey young people at the end of the cohort. We collected data on the summer programs that included interviews with summer programs, as well as surveys with the young people that participated in summer programs. And we have that CitySpan data. We're going to do, for the first time, actually, a summer report that synthesizes that information. Usually what we've done is made the summer a strategy, and I think that's true, right? When we do the strategy reports for last year, there'll be a summer strategy report because we started late last year. But this coming year, we're going to be sharing the summer report in January. So that way summer programs get it for planning before that, as they kind of gear up for their next summer, they're going to be able to use that report as a resource. And then we do a mid project report, which is generally based on the main thing we produce are the profiles for each of the programs at the midpoint, so that they can see how they're doing relative to their goals. As Rachel described, you know, share those with them at a meeting and talk them, give them a chance to ask questions about the data and what the data looks like. We do a program survey, which we'll be launching soon. And then in spring, you get participant surveys and interviews, focus groups, usually site visits. If this was in a post-COVID world, we would want to go on site and do focus groups with young people and with parents. We don't know if we'll be able to do that, but we're going to try to do online focus groups this year with youth and with parents. So, yeah, and I think we've been talking about when to do a parent survey and a principal survey. You know, parents are kind of overwhelmed right now, so we're trying to figure that out. And it's much easier to do that in person in hard copy than it is to do it online. I'm worried about response rate. But those are the kind of things we're balancing, because we've done a lot of shifting to try to make sure that we're responsive to where the programs and communities are in dealing with COVID, right? So we're still trying to do that, be responsive and figure out how to adapt the evaluation so that it's not overly burdensome, given all the programs and communities are juggling right now. Mika, did I miss anything?
Not sure if I heard you mention the summer program staff survey that we fielded to learn a little bit more about how things were going with programs that were either providing like a hybrid version of their typical programming, or if they were doing virtual programming. So we wanted to learn a little bit more about successes and challenges around that. So we fielded that survey in the summer. And I also just wanted to clarify that the parent survey that Heather was referring to is actually a new survey for parents of after-school participants. So it's not the parents who are involved in the early childhood programs. It's a survey for parents who have students in the after-school programs. That's it. Rachel, is there anything else?
No, I think you guys caught it all.
We usually do a topical paper. So in addition to the report, we'll try to lift up something. Like last year it was the COVID-19 response and what programs were doing to pivot their services to meet the needs of the youth and families that they serve. This coming year, I don't know what that'll be. It usually kind of bubbles up. Like the year before, we did one related to results-based accountability and the way in which programs were capturing different types of outcomes. So we've done it on specific strategies before, like career awareness strategies and youth development strategies. So, you know, as we come around to the beginning of next year, we'll be thinking through, before we do our interviews and focus groups, what's most important to explore more in depth both for the programs and for OFCY. And so we'll be looking in conversation to figure out what we should be diving more deeply into.
Okay, before questions, it is a question. Is this, so for the POC meeting next week, this will be one of the topics? Okay. And any questions from the board right now, the committee? Not the board, but our committee. Okay, so I just have maybe one, I don't know if it's comment, question, et cetera. Will there, I guess, for the evaluation design, is that there's a clear distinction between like what would typically happen if we weren't under COVID-19 and what the shift looks like. So if you could just like really make that clear, and that will be, I think, helpful. And even if there's a section of, and I don't know if that will be part of the interviews or the survey, where there's a part where we can get the experience, or there's evaluation in terms of the programs when they've gone virtual or either a hybrid, that is very clear that it's not just necessarily, I mean, I know most organizations, we want to stay with the outcomes and we want to keep things as, you know, quote unquote normal as possible. But I think there would be some help in identifying actually how did the virtual experience, you know, how was that different from in person? Just because it'll give information of, is this something that you want to do a hybrid later on, or does it give an opportunity? Because I think people wouldn't even think about how to, you know, I mean, we're using Zoom and virtual and distance learning in a whole different way now before, you know, COVID hit. And so I think it would be nice to have an evaluation part that specifically talks about that and that experience, versus that it's not integrated necessarily with the typical outcomes of any of our grantees. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. Makes sense. It does.
Okay.
And I would say that for SPR, that's definitely a working point for how we can make the surveys reflect the real on the ground, what's going on, and those questions Anna Krita raised. I know it's come up in the after school world as well. Like, we need to expand our current survey to address this unique time and how programs are working in their models.
We should have some information on that in the summer report, actually, because we added some questions in the survey related to that. We collected data in the interviews related to that, and the staff survey also talked about their experience with the virtual platforms and engagement, trying to get around to, like, you know, what seems to be working. Because I think programs really want to exchange best practices too and figure out how to do what they're doing better.
Any comments from staff? Scott or Jorge? Okay. Well, I think that's the last, I don't have the agenda in front of me. That is, in terms of the committee, that's the discussion was the last point, right? Is there anything else that we need to
go over? If there's any, if any members of the public want to make a comment on that.
I actually do just have one clarification. As I was going through the materials, you know, I think Heather, you mentioned that there are some indicators of what was different between a normal environment and, you know, the changes due to the COVID environment. And in the results-based accountability scorecard, there are asterisks associated with some of the changes or some of the things that, you know, you couldn't really evaluate on the first section. And then in the second section, participant outcomes, is anyone better off? It is in parentheses, not available due to shelter in place, but there aren't any asterisks associated with, you know, the ones that are outlined below. Is that because all of those were just, you know, unavailable due to the COVID restrictions?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
We do have there's a paragraph near, right, Mika, there's a paragraph where we talk a little bit about COVID, but we didn't want to, like, keep bringing it up over and over again in terms of the implication on data collection, because we do have good data, but, you know, if you think it needs to be more strongly pulled out, we can do that.
And it might be just in the presentation that every year, traditionally, the program was starting in July, and work with the young people or children for 6 to 9 months, and you want to collect the survey data after they participated in a while so the young people could reflect on their experience. And that was always spring. That's when programs always fielded the surveys. And this thing just threw it for a loop. And that is a large portion of the qualitative data of the young people's perspective on how well the program served them. Did they make connections? Did they learn new skills? Did they feel safe? And those kind of primary indicators. So part of the work for this next year is to really prioritize that the survey is available right now for programs. And we're trying to collect for people, if they can, information if they've been longtime participants or participating for a little bit of time. But I think that's a good point that we need to really kind of elevate, and just the presentation just wasn't available due to the timing.
And for this coming year, we're going to want to really prioritize best practices around administering the survey online, because most of the programs, you know, they sit young people down and they do a hard copy of the survey, and everyone, it all happens on the same time or same couple days. And so, you know, sending out an electronic version is just a different way to administer the survey. And the same is true with parents. Usually it's done like at events when parents are coming to the program. So it's just something that we'll be thinking about a lot in terms of making sure we have better quality data this coming year, especially if we're not going to go back to an in-person program.
And I think it's just complicated, just for background knowledge. Like, not only does it happen, you know, usually on paper where they administer it during the program, but then it's also like when you think about the age ranges, right? The younger ones, that's just something that I just don't think we can expect them to do online. Right. And when shelter in place happened, all of the hullabaloo around even just making sure people had technology. And I think a lot of our programs ended up pivoting to support even just the supply of technology. So then to try to think through how we would ask them to do an online survey because we couldn't, we knew so little about the virus then, and people didn't want to touch paper and have it go across different hands. There was no way we could have done it, a paper survey the way they normally do. And then the technology thing just got in the way of us even being able to consider how to do an online. Plus it just felt insensitive given how much people were doing to sort of pivot and support the families and the students that were in so much chaos as a result of the pandemic.
I do think your response this year of how you are trying to now kind of the pendulum swings back to collect a lot of information to fill out your RBA is a good piece to share. It does bring, like, they really did plan. I don't know if it's clear that we are co-funded with OUSD. OUSD also provides a funding to SPR. So our strategy for after school is very aligned. Our metrics are aligned in the after school strategy. And we're looking forward to this kind of co-funded again to add more depth to the evaluation around parent surveys. And one of the plans was, hey, the after school meetings happen in March, and this is the time that you get the parent surveys. So the year was kind of planned around fielding some of these things that just weren't reasonable. And it kind of eats us up a little bit. And I think we're dwelling on it a little bit. Now, if I told them in private, it's like they do have a good deal of data, and there is a lot of positivity in what the programs were able to accomplish.
Yeah, I think it's just to be very, you know, just to be clear and like even to outline that. So, like a lot of times, you know, you see COVID-19 or we had to shift. Yeah, we know everyone had to shift, but what is it specifically in the shift, like even the part where, so I've experienced the same thing, even the part where you have technology, they can't take an online survey if they don't have the technology. And even sometimes your surveys is it applicable to like a Chromebook versus someone who's a laptop versus a Mac versus a PC. I'm sure folks have ran into that because programs aren't compatible to all programs. And so just some of those, I mean, I think, some of those roadblocks is beneficial to outline and to state. So because it just gives a clearer picture in terms of just how programs had to shift and where, versus in someone's mind, it may be like, oh, you transferred or you shift to virtual, but no one is thinking about all of the other pieces that are in place versus, you know, how much support does the parent have to be there in order to help their child, but they can't when I'm working, or I'm working from home too, or we have to share the same laptop. So I think that would be helpful to describe that. And that's why I think I'm emphasizing that more of this is a period of time. It's a snapshot. Hopefully won't be long, too long of a snapshot, but it's a snapshot in time versus what we typically do. But this is what it looks like when you are in, you know, virtual or when you're in hybrid. So this is one, sound like it's an excuse. Two, it doesn't sound like you have to feel bad about it. It is what, you know, it happened. And so people did really good jobs. There's some organizations that did really good jobs of shifting. Others they didn't quite know. And then, you know, others learned from, you know, other organizations. And then the other part, Mike, what you said about OUSD, I think that would be, I hadn't realized how much OUSD is a part of this now. Like before I knew, but I think it's a lot more, and I think that would be helpful also to describe or explain.
Yeah, and I do want to be clear, it isn't the one strategy, but it's the largest funding strategy. It's the $500 million. So, you know, I can't quote it, but it's about 25% to 30% of the total fund. Mm-hmm. But, and that's where it's really a closely aligned partnership. And there's like, there's about 50, the overlap is there's about 52 OUSD schools and about nine or eight charter schools that are kind of outside. So their orbit is a little bit bigger. And OUSD as well supports high school programs, while OSUI only funds elementary and middle school programs. Mm-hmm. So like the Venn diagrams are pretty overlap, but then not perfect.
Okay, are there, Hori, did you have any other questions? I think. Tazan is probably, yeah. Is anybody, or are there any comments from our attendees? Okay, well, I just want to state that I think it was, you know, the evaluation. Thank you for that picture. I mean, thank you for the PowerPoint. Again, I think that it was, for the most part, is really clear, and there's always, you know, you can always tweak something so people can have a better understanding, especially if you're new and you may not understand what the evaluation process looks like. And it's, and again, in this time, everyone is experiencing it differently. You know, it's new for all of us. So anything else that we need to, Scott and Mike, to announce or?
I would just say that we would, with your consent, you know, that we'd bring this, the full report plus all nine strategies and then some samples of the program profiles to the full POC next week, and that we will be posting this information on Friday.
Okay. But that, yeah, because there's nothing that we have to, we vote on, we don't vote on anything here, right? Yeah. No. It's just more, these are the next steps.
Yeah. And I really appreciate your just putting this time in, Ana Creta and Jorge and Tatiana. Give this for them.
And yeah, Tassian maybe probably can't make comments. Don't worry, is there anything, the other part of what
this I'm listening.
Oh, you can? Did you
I
have
been able to talk? No, I thought it was really, really good. And Ankrita, you hit it on the nose with a lot of the comments that I wanted to say. So okay. I just wanted to reiterate that. And also thank you for leading this, given I'm in the airport.
Okay. I can understand how that, I've been on those calls as well. So Hori, one part about the committee also, is there anything that you want to give a recommendation to, because they'll bring this report to the full body? And is there anything that you think should be clarified before, between now and next week, where it'll be a little bit more clear to the full committee?
No, I definitely took some time to go through it and all, and that was that note that I had asked earlier about sort of, it wasn't clear whether or not those results were just not captured. But then I saw that there was a note in parentheses there above that. But other than that, no, I did not have difficulty at all reading through the report and sort of seeing the information on it. It was very clear. You know, this is the first eval report that I've read. So I'd actually be curious to see, you know, previous reports, you know, because of the shift in sort of strategies and able to get results back from the programs, you know, whether, what those look like, what those changes were, other than just, you know, clearly not being able to gather some of the information. So I think, you know, hats off to the team for pulling together the report. miss the time that we're in, because it's, you know, I can't imagine when you're so used to being able to go somewhere in person and talk to people and get a real sense of what's going on, you know, having to shift to everything so quickly in such a short amount of time to virtual and by phone only. So, you know, I definitely just acknowledge the efforts that, you know, you've made during the difficult times that we've experienced.
Great, thank you. So with that, if there isn't anything else,
my last thing to say, you just reminded me, Ana Carita and Jorge, as we do present this next week to the POC, prior to throwing it straight to Mika and Heather and Rachel, I'd appreciate if you could have some opportunity to introduce it a little bit and just talk to your work tonight and your understanding of it, and kind of as staff, I'll step back and talk less and just have you kind of introduce them and the report.
Okay, great. Just make sure you may have to prompt me.
Oh, well, I'll try. I appreciate what you've done tonight, Ana Carita. We just jump in and, you
know. All right, if there's nothing else, then we will adjourn this committee meeting at 6:09. And thank you all for attending and coming out, and hopefully we'll see you all next week.
Thank you so much for your feedback. It was really helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, you all.